This is the Age Real Footy Podcast. Coming up, Collingwood moves into the top four with an ugly win over Carlton. But can the Pies hold on to that spot? We take a look at the Jeremy Cameron hit and wonder what impact that will have on the Giants. Plus, we preview the big game this week between the Tigers and Swans, the top of the table clash. But before we get into all that, remember, if you want to ask our experts a question, email it to realfootypod@fairfaxmedia.com.au.
Boke, Wingard, not sure why he didn't kick a goal. Gray might, and he does. Robbie does.
Marking chance, Stringer missed it. Guelphy's there. Who's going to stay on their feet? Guelphy did. Pushed off Cole. Back to Bagley. That is brilliant.
Treloar, this is what he's built for. Running, charging, and goaling.
Hello and welcome, I'm Michael Gleeson, and with us this week, fresh off the plane from Europe, European correspondent Caroline Wilson. Welcome back, Caroline.
Very funny, Gleese. I actually got back late Saturday night just in time to see, was Jack Zeeble kick that unbelievable goal?
Yes.
And I enjoyed your comments about Mitch Wallace in Monday's Age, but plenty to talk about. I don't think I've missed all of that much. A couple of surprising appointments. Very interesting press conference on Saturday held by the Adelaide Crows. I want to dissect that one, Jake.
Yep.
We should introduce him.
Welcome.
Just an afterthought here.
Chief footy writer Jake Noel. Welcome again, Jake. Well, what did you make of that, of the weekend, Jake? Caro's touched on the Adelaide press conference.
Yeah, look, Adelaide, there's been a pattern in Adelaide. I said this on radio on the weekend. There's been a pattern of... they start out in a position of sort of not admitting things and then end up ceding ground. So it starts out saying everything was fine with, you know, Jake Lever. They were sort of talking down the idea of him staying, of him leaving, and then he ends up leaving. With the camp, admittedly there were no formal complaints to the Players Association, but clearly there were players, and Eddie Betts, there were issues around some of the Indigenous players, which Rob Chapman eventually admitted. So maybe Adelaide Crows, I think it was a good exercise to get out on the front foot and sort of admit that things had been a bit amiss. The other thing is, they've got to face a big question about their injury management. That's what's ruined their season.
Yeah, and as I think, Gleese, you wrote that also on Monday, that it's more what they did apart from the camp that has hurt them as well as the camp. But well, you remember, Jake, on the eve of the Richmond-Adelaide Grand Final rematch over at the Adelaide Oval, I spent an hour with Taylor Walker, and he said then that the collective minds camp wouldn't happen again, and that the Indigenous players had been upset by it. So I don't know why Adelaide has taken four months to come around to this point.
I think that one thing, from what I understand, one thing that occurred is one of the figures that was difficult for the players amongst those leaders from the group that collective minds had did it, he hadn't been at the club and then suddenly reappeared, and he was one of the blokes that the players just didn't get along with. And then they were suddenly like, what's he doing here?
Yeah.
And it was initially a bit like, oh, well, he's back in. And then they were like, hang on.
And it wasn't just the players, Michael. It was the staff as well. There was stuff he was doing amongst the staff and some of the group exercises there. It was a disaster. And when you admit that Indigenous players are unhappy, there's a lot more to it than is admitted. And I thought the Players Association, their role in it was a bit disappointing. I think they were gun-shy after the Melbourne experience and they didn't do enough.
Jake? Collingwood Carlton at the weekend, a mockbuster. People turn out because it's a rivalry. You know, 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Oh well, it was. I mean, not many. You know, 50,000 there for Collingwood Carlton, but
it's better than they have had in recent years.
Still, ugly game. It looked like Carlton decided, we're not going to tolerate another smashing in the first quarter like we did last week.
No,
and it was numbers, back to last year.
Carlton have gone back, and really, apart from the Fremantle game, this was happening against Geelong.
And Sydney.
There's more of a sandbagging of the game where Brendan Bolton puts numbers back and he's playing a more defensive system. And then what they did in this game, though, it was, you know, I think you've referred to this, it was almost Charlie Curnow, it was almost Curnow's paddock or whatever you want
Curnow's
to call
courtyard.
It. Curnow's courtyard. Curnow's courtyard. Play numbers behind the ball, then isolate Charlie Curnow, who's such an extraordinary athlete. And I've often been wondering lately, with Geelong Footy Club's raids on other clubs, whether they really missed the player that they really needed to get, which was a local kid from Torquay called Charlie Curnow. If they'd gotten him, I tell you what, that would be a bigger coup than Patrick Dangerfield.
His brother played pretty well too.
Yeah.
I mean, I watched the game on TV and I really felt for, and I've missed two or three rounds of footy, but you really saw the future for Carlton
Cripps
on Sunday.
Oh, yeah.
Patrick Cripps, you know, there were sort of question marks earlier in the season.
I know, of course
we have, but when he and Curno get going, and Ed Curno was fantastic too, and, you know, Cade Simpson, such a wonderful stalwart of, you know, that footy club and the game. With those four on fire, they were impressive.
That's true, but it did feel like.
And Mark Murphy saying he'll stay, and, you know, it just seemed to be a good week for Carlton for me.
Yeah, but that sort of also says.
You didn't see last week.
Yeah.
No.
For last week.
Yeah.
That was horrifying, and it raised all the questions.
They needed to bounce back.
Of, you know, how, what's their list management? Where are they going? How long is this going to take? Does the AFL.
Is that why Steve Silvani got on the front foot and gave? He seemed to be doing. He's been media silent for a year or for 6 months, and he was on radio, he was in the newspaper. Everywhere I looked, there was Steve Silvani.
Well, I think they probably quite reasonably thought we've actually got to try and explain our story a bit now as to where we are at. But I still felt coming out of that game, I didn't think they gave themselves a really strong chance to win it. They were close, but it didn't feel like you could be attacking
enough. Early third quarter, though.
Yeah, but. They were going to need Curnow to kick 8 or 10 to win it.
They were a bit stiff with the players they lost before and
absolutely,
during the game.
Absolutely, but they were behind the. They were putting players back before they lost the few players. But and yes, you thought once you lose players, you aren't likely to win it. But look, it was a more admirable performance, certainly, even just in effort alone. It looked like they had a plan, and it looked like they had the passion
I think the takeout for it from most people would be in Curnow. Charlie Curnow, apologies to Ed, who does a good job. Charlie Curnow and Cripps, they've got their Hodge and Mitchell.
Yeah.
And that's how Carlton Footy Club should be selling their future. We have the different sorts of players. We have our Hodge and Mitchell for the next, you know, 10 years.
Well, they did, and that's the long-term future. But what of the short-term future, Jake? What about the Pies? Are they a top four team?
Well, their best footy, their game against Melbourne was very impressive, and that game was completely unimpressive. So on what they showed against Carlton, no. On what they showed against Melbourne, they would be capable of playing. They didn't just beat Melbourne, they towed them and kicked about 20-odd goals. So it depends on, I think their energy seemed a little bit down, and I've still got doubts about their bottom four or five players in their side. I don't see them at the level of Richmond. Whether they can make it. Geelong is probably the favourite to finish fourth, looking at the draw and looking at what they can do, and obviously Caninia Park.
Oh, I don't reckon Geelong. I reckon Collingwood are better than Geelong. I reckon their bottom six are better than Geelong's bottom six.
If you look at their run home as well, like they've got Gold Coast this week. Essendon would have been seen as a good game. They've now had some big scalps, Essendon. That was a fantastic win at the
fantastic
weekend.
Fantastic win, yep.
Then Collingwood's got a string of games against the top teams. They've got Sydney, Richmond,
that's
West
right.
Coast. They've got to win these next couple. Yeah, they've got to win these next couple to brace themselves for that sort of period, because they've only really played two of the present top eight.
Yeah, they haven't beaten. The win against Melbourne was a standout game, but do they? I think they're in the mix for that last spot. I think three of those spots, Richmond are going to be in the top few. Sydney, I think, will be, and West Coast, it's theirs to lose. Although a little bit of shakiness about them on the road, as well as that game over there, that was a big surprise.
But the last 2 years would tell us that anything can happen, and Collingwood are better poised than either Richmond or the Bulldogs were.
That's
at
true.
The same time in the previous 2 years.
That's true, but there probably wasn't a team like Richmond above. I think Richmond. Richmond are the clear flag favourites. I know, Caro, you hate hearing this, but
I'm happy to hear
their
it.
Their consistency, their game against Geelong was a win of a team that knows how good it is and knows what it's doing.
Does Melbourne know if they are good and how good they can be? I mean, that was a much better and really admirable performance against Port, but still it raises that question of their record against the teams. Now,
yeah.
I'm not saying it's a mental frailty, but the fact is, and Goodwin says, we're aware of the commentary about it. No, it's just the facts.
Sorry.
It's just the facts about how you've gone against the best teams. They've got to do that. But there is a top four spot for them too.
There is, and Port Adelaide. Let's not forget Port Adelaide. They've now knocked off Richmond and Melbourne in tight games at home, but they have done it. They've got a bit of momentum. They're very hard to beat there, obviously. I think that Melbourne, it was interesting that Simon Goodwin took a positive view of that game rather than having a go at them when they didn't kick a goal in the last quarter, Caro.
Yeah, I was surprised too. I mean, I would have thought Melbourne would bounce back and win that game. I was really.
I thought they'd win.
Because Port, you know, there's still a slight fragility about Port to me, even though on their best, and you look at their, I mean, their top six are as good as anyone's top six in the AFL. And, you know, Paddy Ryder, he's a mighty player, isn't he?
Yeah, and Sam Powell-Pepper, you know, who had a you know, a pretty interesting year with the, you know, with the allegations of misbehaviour against a woman, and he, you can see Port fought hard to get the best outcome there, and he is a hell of a player for a second year player. He had 17 tackles, Gleese. Mm. 17 so, tackles, and him and Ollie Wines are these beasts around the ball. They can just wrench the ball out of a contest.
It's all about psychological management for Melbourne now, I reckon. And Simon Goodwin was probably just looking at the best way to go forward. I mean, it's pretty devastating to have lost those two last games. The Collingwood loss was that. I mean, they must have been shattered by that. That was Melbourne.
So that explains the psychology of it, doesn't it? Though it says that look, you we were shattered against the, them. We were managing. Look, we were good boys. We were good. Yeah, we didn't kick the goal in the last quarter. We're in this game. We were right in it. And it's just a matter of it'll
they,
come.
They got
come.
The ball. If you look at the numbers in the game, they got the ball forward a hell of a lot. And they just couldn't convert. So it wasn't a bad effort. It was inefficient.
Well, coming up, we'll take a look at what Jeremy Cameron's elbow has done for the Giants race to try and make the eight.
You're listening to The Age, Real Footy Podcast.
Andrews is down and he has not moved. He has not moved Harris Andrews.
I reckon he was out before he hit the ground there, Duano.
Well, that was reminiscent of Plugger and in his heyday.
Peter Caven.
Are you joking? It was nothing like Peter Caven.
If you want to sit in the hole, I'm going through you. That's what he was doing, Jeremy Cameron.
Well, I tell you what, footy's changed because I think, did Plugger get about 6 weeks for that?
He got 7 or 8.
Okay, and what did Barry Hall get? Did he get seven?
Seven. Should have got 12.
Yeah, I mean, that shows me that footy's
changed. Hang on,
which
Barry Hall?
The Staker incident.
Brent Staker in Sydney. I think that Jeremy Cameron...
So hang on. Full disclosure, we're recording this before...
Before the tribunal,
match review officer makes his decision, which we expect to be a direct referral to the tribunal. Then it'll be argued as to what, if he's found guilty, and what the penalty will be.
He's got form, Jeremy Cameron.
Yes, he does.
He's got a poor history. And I think that this is such a... Maybe this sounds like it's being a bit romantic, but it just really disappointed me that after the game he didn't approach the player and say...
Well, he had to get in the ambulance with him.
Well, he said he would.
Well, the player went to him looking at the replay, and everyone said, wasn't that a nice touch? Harris Andrews going up to him and saying... Jeremy Cameron should have gone to Harris Andrews.
He probably walked up and said, I know where you live.
It didn't look like it. It looked like he was being very magnanimous about it. But you only had to look at the reaction from other footballers on social media. It was very disappointing. I can sort of understand why GWS are so hot under the collar about the response, because I don't think it was, as I said, anything like Barry Hall. And to think people are talking about 6 weeks for this, that tells me how much footy's changed.
Well, I think that if you step it back, and if we assume that he gets a direct tribunal referral, you're talking
minimum three.
Minimum four, I think, because a three you can get normally. Normally it says, well, the grading goes that bit higher.
Well, let's do this is a time capture, everyone. Okay. What do you think he gets, Gleese?
I think four.
Karen?
Yeah, I think four's about right for me.
Yeah, I'm four. I've been four since I saw it. The moment I saw it, I said, that's going to be 4 weeks. And I don't think he'll get five. I think he'll get four. But I think it's an interesting, just a little subtle thing. Pull me up, Gleese or Caro, if you think this is a big stretch. I always think these things they seem worse when soccer has a huge stage like the World Cup and you think about parents watching incidents and things. I just think that footy is a bit more jumpy about those incidents.
I'd be proud that my son played a game where he got back up again and didn't sort of collapse down after someone sort of, you know, touched him on the toe. I think that the interesting response is the response from other footballers. And there were people who, you know, used that, you know, well-known phrase, well-known term, dogs act. Paul Ruse, obviously, he does have a thing about GWS. There's no doubt about it. And he had a crack at Leon Cameron for not being stronger in his response to it. Whereas, you know, Paul Ruse never saw an incident in his entire life when he was coaching, did he? He just said he didn't see it. So I thought that was pretty ordinary. I think that the big problem here is how they're going to cope without him, because they have got good players
I don't think it's overstating it to say this could quite simply, this suspension by Jeremy Cameron could cost the Giants a spot in the eight, and starting with the Hawthorn game. Now, if he's playing in that Hawthorn game, the Giants are clear favourites.
They're already missing Toby Green for another month as well.
Again, right. A lack of discipline by a team Giants that has been a problem, hasn't it? No, discipline
they've had those issues. A lot of them are Toby Green. A lot of those incidents are one person. But he has a four-match suspension for, who was the player 2 years ago?
Reece Matheson, was it?
Reece Matheson of Brisbane.
And he previously hit
Jared Roughhead.
Yeah.
The Reece Matheson was awful.
That was a pre-season one. That was pretty bad, though.
That awful. That was worse, actually.
And he missed the first four.
Yeah.
Although I think under the system, I think those priors don't...
It was 2016, I think.
So. It was 2016, that's right. So those priors would be interesting. I mean, they don't technically get loaded.
It's interesting when you raise about the idea of the timing of this occurring with World Cup being on and the sensitivity towards another game. There'll be an interesting... The other interesting one for me is what they do with Dale Thomas and the bump on Levi Greenwood, which concussed him out of the game. Now, the video from the game that at the time... I couldn't see whether it was directly an elbow to the a shoulder to the head in the bump, or if it was a clash of heads. If it's a clash of heads, even though you're coming in to block a guy, well, Steve Hocking and the AFL has decided that they're just accidental now. Even though you're coming in to pick, you know, to bump
a
bloke, it's the Ryan Burton.
That's the decision made with Ryan Burton. But do we believe that that's going to continue? That every time there's a decision to bump,
it has this year. Okay. It has, and. I know that there's misgivings at other levels of the AFL by some other members of the AFL about that redirection. Now, it's said that it was changed after Fife. The rules weren't substantially changed after Fife. There's still provision that those things are reasonably foreseeable. In every other position, it's reasonably foreseeable. You bump someone heavily, their heads clash. Now, as I say, I'm not sure whether it was a shoulder of Thomas's that got Greenwood or if it was the heads, but it's picking a player in that situation. It's an added backdrop to it, isn't it, that you talk about with the soccer?
And Michael, to labour the soccer analogy, the old yellow and red card scenario has been invoked again over the weekend. I still think it would be a disaster for footy.
Yeah, I don't see any of the incidents of the weekend being deserving of that. Like the Cameron one, I still wouldn't give a card. You know, people talk about cards, even if they're introduced. I think it has to be
a Barry Hall status.
Exactly.
Situation.
It's got to be a swing of a fist that is quite clear. Gee, you've just lost the plot. Get off. Whereas this was.
And Dennis Banks on Reece Jones. Yeah. Things like that.
The Barry Hall one was isolated and foreign even at the time. And that was, almost a decade ago now. So you'd have to think that. It's so unlikely that those things are going to happen anymore on the footy field.
No, they've really dropped out. It's actually it's interesting. Footy's a much cleaner game, but it's still as dangerous as ever
GWS gets there as a consequence of a probable suspension, I think you'd call it. Hawthorn is the other one. With North. Now, North getting over the line in that last minute, really, you'd almost have said that just costs them if they were to lose. You know, that would have been the loss that would cost them a spot in the eight. Now, they're still there. Personally, I think Hawthorn will leapfrog them. I know North's got a good run home. But Hawthorn, those two, they've played all the top eight.
Is everyone else in the eight safe, though, Gleese?
Most likely, I think.
Well, Port Adelaide, I think, will definitely make it. Geelong will definitely make it with their draw. Collingwood are home, in my view, certainly in the top eight. So who does that leave? That leaves Melbourne, North Melbourne, Hawthorn and GWS for those last two spots. Mm. Melbourne, they've got to make it, don't they?
Melbourne makes it for me. I think there's one change, and I think Hawthorn gets there. I'm not convinced. I wouldn't be surprised if Collingwood doesn't get there. Which sounds strange for a team in the fourth position.
Oh, no, I think it only takes
a loss to, say, an Essendon. Then you've got a couple of those top games. Now, you need to make sure you win at least some of those top eight games.
I think Collingwood are on fire. I think they'll make it, and I reckon GWS will be the other team that gets there.
You think they'll get ahead of Hawthorn?
Yep.
So they'll beat Hawthorn this week, you obviously believe, without Cameron and Green.
Look, they've still got a pretty impressive team. Yeah, I think they will. I think they will. But, you know, I've been wrong before, Jake. I just think that...
Well, you like their pace, don't you, Jake?
The Hawks have just been, a couple of times, have been so off the mark for me this year.
Yeah, well, on the road is interesting. It's up there. A couple of years ago, Hawthorn just could not run with them. The thing the Giants have got over nearly every other team is their ability on the outside of the contest to run.
Yeah, so, but it is hurt this year as opposed to those previous. Scully, yeah. Williams, Wilson, these the guys that they got enormous run from.
They have been decimated, haven't they?
So, you know, you take all of those out, plus you
and
lose.
Toby Green is a, you know, use the word talismanic sort of player. He seems, the whole team seems to lift when he's playing.
And just extraordinary, just to cap off, and I know we've talked about collective minds and Adelaide's admission, but staggering to think that that team, after what they achieved last year, none of us think will make the eight now.
But if you look at, no, they won't now. But if
it's
you look
staggering,
at
isn't it?
What
really?
Team did they put out there compared to what team did they put out there on grand final day? And look at those that aren't there. It's less surprising when you see the players missing. Anyway, we'll take a break. Coming up, Just Between Us.
Just Between Us.
Yes, welcome to the latest edition of Just Between Us. Sam McClure and Daniel One Piece Journey bringing you the latest whispers in footy circles that we'll bring to you. Daniel, One Piece, welcome.
Good to be here, Sam. It's always a pleasure.
And it is for you.
We begin this week with a meeting of the minds.
Collective minds?
No. Oh, topical, though.
Sorry.
But it occurred at the MCG on Sunday before the Carlton-Collingwood match.
There was is when Vic Metro was playing Vic Country.
Yes, and there was quite a high-powered meeting in the Northern Stand, in the members.
Tell us more.
Well, gathered together were four individuals. One was the Kerno's dad. I'm not sure of his first name, but Ed and Charlie's dad.
Yes.
If anyone knows his name, please message me. One was Mark Lagudice, the Carlton president. There was Ned Kelly of Craig Kelly of TLA ESP.
Runs the biggest sports management company in the country.
He does. He does. And whose son Will was playing in that game.
Good
point. And AFL chief executive Gillon McLachlan.
Oh, now what was on the agenda of
said
meeting?
I'm not 100% sure, but it was no doubt there's some pretty high powered individuals in that discussion. So,
well, tell us more of what was said, Daniel. I mean, four people sitting at the footy together, they're allowed to do that. What do you think was on the agenda?
Well, I'd only be speculating, Sam.
Well, please speculate. It's just between us.
Well, any number of topics could have been. Maybe Gil was canvassing their ideas on Tasmania.
Ooh.
Or perhaps how much certain players might be worth.
Okay. I like it.
Sam.
Let's take you back to Saturday night. Daniel, the Western Bulldogs were in a very winnable position. They were 3 points up with 45 seconds left, and then Mitch Wallace puts it out in the full, and we all know what happens from there. Jack Zabel kicks the winner. We already know that the coach, Luke Beveridge, delivered one of the most almighty sprays after the game that has been heard in some time, and it's left some people at the club just wondering if that is the best way to get through to the younger generation.
Interesting. But to tell us more.
Well, I think the general belief is that there is a changing of the guard when it comes to the newer, younger players coming into the system, and that the old school, you know, tearing paint off the wall and bring your mouth guard sort of stuff doesn't maybe get through as well as it used to.
Just to gauge your opinion, what gets the best out of you, Sam? Do you like to be sprayed, or are you a cuddle sort of a guy?
No, I like strong, direct and honest feedback.
360 degrees.
Oh, yeah.
Leading team style.
No mucking around.
We do sit you in a circle quite often here at The Age. Sam, just between us, Nick Riewoldt, a very, very busy man still.
He's becoming media powerhouse, that man.
Media commitments and a fantastic commentator.
He's very good, yeah.
And still keeping a close eye on St Kilda. But there's another talent of his that probably hasn't quite been received enough credit.
Oh, a bit of a score review.
He's a very good cricketer. And he's shown that he was a very handy junior cricketer, and from time to time he's played in charity matches, etc. And believe, just between us, that there's been a fair bit of interest from local clubs.
Oh, come on.
About getting Nick Craywell down to play some cricket. And I think he's got a taste for it. So watch this.
Are you sort of talking district cricket? Or
I don't think district cricket, but I just think local. He played a game at Birragara with Peter Hamlin, of the formerly of The Age, for Maddie's Vision. So he's...
Matt, giving away your source there.
That wasn't my source, but nevertheless, okay. And Nick Rewald, a very handy cricketer, so I think there's a fair bit of interest in his services.
Yeah, what did we learn today, Dan? Never give up your sources. No. See you next week.
Thanks.
Just between us.
Richmond fans are stunned. They've gone quiet as Kennedy makes the escape, sends it inside 50. One more and finish the job, and it's Gary Rowan, and he's right foot in there. Swans.
Well, a lot's changed since that moment when Gary Rowan won. It was the last time they played these two teams. The top of the table clash, Richmond and Sydney. And, gee, that was at the MCG, Richmond's home, where they've made it a fortress. But this will be at Etihad Stadium, Jake, and they've got an enviable record there, the Swans.
14 out of 15, the Sydney Swans have won at Etihad. So they're much better at Etihad on the numbers than they are at the SCG, where North beat them and Adelaide beat them this year. It's quite interesting. I think something to do with, I know it's the ground dimensions or what it is, but they have a very, very good record there. And Richmond...
they are a very, very good team who always makes the finals and generally makes the top four. So that probably is part of it as well. But you're right. It's still disappointing, I reckon, that it's a top of the table clash. It's a Thursday night and maybe it's going to be raining. I'm not sure. I think they are predicting a bad night, but so disappointing that a game like that isn't at the MCG for Richmond supporters.
For the Richmond supporters, but having said
particularly given Richmond's record there.
I don't think Richmond will get a lot of sympathy, just as Collingwood have in the past and other MCG tenants, when the interstate teams look at it and they say, well, you played, we qualified higher than you and we played an away grand final. Have we qualified? Yeah. No, this is becoming, Caro, that deal with MCG is one of the biggest, it's,
Jake, I'm aware of it. I've never heard more whinging by non-Victorian clubs. It's almost like the whinging was validated by the new deal, which set up footy in so many ways financially for the next 30, 40 years.
Did it?
We know the grand final. Look, Gleese, the grand final is not going to be moved around. It's just,
well, it's not now.
But it shouldn't be. It shouldn't be moved around.
What about Sydney?
Sydney haven't given up on the best of three scenario,
of three. I'm not talking best of three.
Well, what about Andrew Ireland.
What about alternating every second or third year with Homebush and having an 85,000 or 90,000 up there, which that does hold over 80,000?
Gee, that'd be fun, wouldn't it? Trekking out to Homebush for the Jake
for the New South Wales government. I'm just bringing up. They play State of Origin in Melbourne. I'm just raising the possibility.
Some things. You know, the Melbourne Cup is run at Flemington. Now, I know it's called the Melbourne Cup, but the MCG is the home.
There's no track in the middle of the city. You're not going to have it in the CBD.
No, but I'm saying you don't move a massive
You're saying
event.
It's Wimbledon or Wembley. You're saying it's the FA Cup final or it's...
Yeah, that's what the grand final is. And don't compare it to other codes in this country. It's at the greatest ground in the country, one of the greatest grounds in the world. But anyway,
this week, it's not going to be the MCG and it's not the grand final, is at Etihad Stadium.
So will Sydney go in as favourites?
Well, they probably will, but no, Richmond's... Richmond's record is not too bad there since they've had in the last 2 years, since they've, putting aside their poor season, but since they've been strong, three of the last five they've won there.
They were slaughtered by St Kilda there. That was their worst loss of last, barring the Adelaide loss at Adelaide Oval earlier in the year. And they only just got over the line a month or so ago against North, 6 or 7 weeks ago against North. So you would say, I reckon it'll be line ball this game. I'm sure.
Well, it should be. The best two teams in it.
And let's hope that Alex Rance plays on Buddy Franklin.
Yeah.
Both players, interestingly enough, have been criticised while you were gone, Caro, for staging.
Yep, well aware of that.
That's been been an interesting little subplot. So interesting to see if there's any theatrics in the contest. If one falls over and...
Oh, I'm just looking forward to seeing two of the all-time greats of the game play against each other. I hope you're right, Jake. I hope they do.
I think it was the best alliteration in a headline from somewhere where, did Lance do a Rance dance? It's like, what the hell's that?
Well, it's a pretty significant game too, isn't it? Because the winner gets a...
Oh, the home final.
Well, it's massive. It's a massive
particularly
game.
Particularly with West Coast
With West Coast having lost to Essendon, it's a Thursday night game, which I love. I think they're a fantastic Thursday night game. Not every week.
I'm for Thursday.
Not a parent of young kids anymore, though.
But it's the school holidays, isn't it?
for some.
Oh, well,
private either, schools perhaps, Carrie.
Well, they break up this week or next week. Come on, it's heading towards the mid-year break. I think it's a fantastic initiative by the AFL, but I just wish it was at the MCG. Just briefly on Essendon, where are they at? Are they any conversation towards the top eight?
They are the stalking horse. They are the team that they're the eight moulding team. They're the team that moulds the eight, because I don't think they can get there from two games out. I don't think you can make up and that percentage. Much ground and percentage. But they are the team that, given their list and given the performances they've now started to put together, underperformed earlier in the year. Yep. And they are a better team than they have been.
Well, their best footy, I think I said last week, they're the one team in the bottom eight that can beat top eight sides.
Yes.
They've beaten Port Adelaide here. They beat West Coast in Perth. They beat Geelong. So they've beaten some good sides and they've lost to Carlton. Carlton's only win for the year. So what Essendon are you going to get? It's like a luck of the draw. You show up and you get the good Essendon. You can get, doesn't matter who you are, you can get done. If you get the bad Essendon, you're a chance, even if you're down the bottom four.
So just an observation. Since Mark Neild left, obviously, they've been immeasurably better. I noticed that St Kilda had their own version of the off-field circuit breaker when they announced that Tony Elshaug was getting the flick.
Didn't really change much.
But it could.
Well, they had a pretty impressive win while I was away.
But they're two different things, aren't they? I mean, one's someone that's involved directly with trying to manage the team out on the field, and the other one's trying to manage who comes into the team next year and beyond. I mean, that's not going to affect how a player performs on the field.
You wouldn't have thought Mark Neild leaving shouldn't make that much of a difference.
No.
And yet it's made a huge difference.
I
wonder if the Adelaide press conference was the same sort of psychological circuit breaker attempt by talking so publicly about collective mind.
I think it was trying to repair the
bad blood.
Well, some of the discontent within the playing ranks, hopefully the club learns from it, and when something's awry in the future, there'll be more candid about it from the start.
Do you think? What do you think of Essendon without Joe Danaher too, Jack? Do you think there's been a ripple effect in how they've attacked or how they've played?
Not really. I think what happens with Essendon, it's more how they play as a. I don't think one player really has been that important or not important. I think it's more what happens in the midfield they seem to be very driven by Zach Merritt.
Hmm.
And the Zach Merritt good games, I haven't done the stats on it, but the Zach Merritt good games seem to be very important. And Dyson Heppel, when they beat the Giants, that's the other team that they beat, Caro, was the Giants up yep. north. When they've had those wins, Dyson Heppel has been important and Zach Merritt. So I think it all happens around the ball. They're not a strong team in the ruck, but when Tom Bell Chambers. So I don't think Joe Danaher has been – they're an unusual team in that they seem able to cover him.
Yeah.
Where some other clubs without their big forward would have a problem.
And just finally, in terms of looking forward to this week, so Adelaide take on West Coast. Adelaide's injuries.
Yeah. Adelaide's or West
Sorry,
Coast?
Sorry, West Coast.
West Coast
yeah.
without
well, we know
Darling
Adelaide have
Kennedy.
Got shocking
yeah.
injuries, but West Coast have been hurt as well, haven't they?
Oh, they've been tremendously hurt. And
and their young players don't seem to have been up to it. Well, certainly not last week anyway, against the Bombers.
No, and I didn't think... Yeah, I was surprised because I thought Zach Merritt was given too much latitude early in the game last week, particularly when teams have typically realised you have to put someone to him and tighten up on him. I think they just backed in Shuey and Gaff and Yo to get the job done. But... yeah, I think that...
Jack Darling's such an important player, isn't he?
Yeah, and it's not a short-term injury. So
no, it's devastating.
They've got to find a way around it. Well,
are they coming back a little bit to where we thought they'd be, Caro? Is that... Oh, Gleese, is that...
Oh, without those two, it's...
They're gun players.
They're probably their best players.
No, I don't think that. I still think they're a top four team. I think they'll finish up in the top four. They've just been too good and around the ground. But the young... blokes who just couldn't step up against the Bombers will be a big question mark
on that though now, doesn't there, about the top four for them? If these two aren't there, that's such a devastating blow to the way they're structured, the way they attack. It's not as easy as just dropping someone in as a plug-in, plug-out sort of replacement.
Well, you've got to think of it. I mean, we're often accused of not paying enough heed to the non-Victorian club's best players. I wouldn't say it's like Richmond without Rewalt and Rance, but it is like Richmond without Rewalt and Cochin or something like that. It is It's almost at that level.
I think it's different because structurally
West Coast
they're
midfield's
one of the,
been so impressive, and they've still got. Oh yeah, I disagree, but anyway.
Yeah, because also the other thing, Jake, is that in some ways it's worse because they're both from the same area of the ground, and they've got a game that is based on having two big, good key forwards rather than taking
that,
out a midfielder
out
and
the
a
midfield.
Forward.
They were beaten out of the midfield in the game. So, yeah. I mean, that's all true.
But then you've got to maximise your forward entries, that's what they couldn't do.
They couldn't do that, no.
Melbourne and St Kilda, it's the game that, again, we'll look at it and go, well, here's two teams that were on par until...
A year ago.
And one's gone off the cliff and the other one's... continue to rise. So,
do you think, Gleese, that win that St Kilda had against Gold Coast, do you think the players got up for Alan Richardson? Or do you think it was just they had the stronger bodies and Gold Coast just ran out of steam, which they have repeatedly?
I think it's the second one, definitely.
I think so too.
Yeah, and I think they had the sniff of a win. I think that they knew this team stops in last quarters. We're in this still. We're right here.
Yeah, I just, Carrie, you asked the question before about St Kilda and about the Tony Elshaw's departure, from that position as list manager, and how that was being handled. St Kilda were basically saying, privately, that they felt that and some of us have written about this, that they felt their list was the bigger problem than the coaching. That was essentially the message that's been coming out of the club. So it wasn't that surprising that this happened.
No, we were talking about it in April, weren't we?
That's right. Yeah, there was a briefing down at the club, and there was a lot of questions from journalists about the state of their list. And they were sort of saying, we don't think it's so bad. And
But that has to be self-evident. I mean, they re-signed the coach in January this year. I mean, they've made the decision that they've got the right coach. It has to therefore be... In their opinion, it has to be list that is now the problem for them. So,
and they were unhappy with Tony Elshaug's performance at that media briefing, and we talked about that. He sort of rather took over the briefing, really, and talked down the list and talked down a lot of things, and it did not go down well with the powers.
Coming up, quick questions.
We're online all the time. Just search Age Real Footy on Facebook or Twitter.
Higgins runs onto it. Over the top to Benny Brown. He'll get closed down. He gets a foot to it. The goal's going to be kicked by Zeeble and the Kangaroos at the front with 20 seconds left.
Well, welcome back. Time for quick questions. Caro, straight into it. Saturday night, was that the moment for Luke Beveridge to deliver an old-fashioned spray?
Yeah, I think it was. A good old-fashioned spray doesn't hurt anyone. They were pretty impressive, the Western Bulldogs, and clearly he believed that was their game to win. Brad Scott disagreed.
Yeah, he had the paint peeling off the walls and then was upset that people heard it outside the room.
Fascinating scenario going on with the Bulldogs behind the scenes, but more of that next week maybe.
Yes. Jake, what is the significance of Tom Lynch re-signing at Adelaide?
Oh, it's a club that obviously they've still got to sign Rory Sloane. That's gravely, well, somewhat in debt, to a degree in doubt. They've lost a lot of players. Very important for them to sign a player. They were very keen to trumpet it because they've lost players, Charlie Cameron and obviously Jake Lever, and things that unsettled their club. So I think it was very important.
It was a big re-signing, but it was also one that sounded a bit like clickbait, wasn't it? Tom Lynch re-signs. He's like, not that one. The Gold Coast one, but still a big one. Caro, was the Collingwood-Carlton clash marred by a jumper clash?
Look, you know how I feel about alternative strips. I think the AFL have... really botched this, and I noticed Collingwood chairman Eddie Maguire's had another crack at it, and he's saying they're going to design a third clash strip the next time they play the Blues. I don't understand why these two teams need clash jumpers. I don't understand why Richmond Essendon need clash jumpers. So often this year, when the AFL have put in a clash strip, it's been the opposite effect. The two teams have clashed. Don't buy it. Sick of it. Another great tradition of the game being taken away.
I'm with Caro. I think that clash jumpers are overrated. People can tell. It's
Collingwood Carlton have been playing each other for over 100 years. This is one of the great rivalries of footy. And to some degree, some very, very small degree, admittedly, it's been diminished by this ridiculous insistence on teams wearing not their traditional jumper. Don't get me started.
Well, if you get more people away from the ball, it's easier to work out who's got the ball. Is Jaden Stevenson the best first-year player to date, Jake?
Rising star?
Well, let's reframe it. best first year player so far.
Well, you were going to throw in someone else.
I was going to throw in Ollie Florent as a potential
second year player.
All right, is he the rising star? Nathan Buckley said
he's
at the moment.
He's a clubhouse leader, but I'd say that I wouldn't write off Ed Richards from the Bulldogs. Also, with that fantastic heritage with his grandfather Ron and Lou Richards. I think Ed Richards is a special player. So I would say I think it's got a bit to go.
Those first 6 weeks that Sydney lost all those games last year and had all those injuries, The players they blooded will be seeing in September this year. John Longmire said there were positives out of it. Gee, there were positives.
Yeah, I think Rayner's been good. Tim Kelly as well probably doesn't qualify for the Rising. So that's why you sort of say, well, what about a first-year player? He's had as much impact as anyone. And, Jake, last week you wrote about Essendon interest in Mitch Wallace. Where do you think Wallace will be next year?
I don't think he'll be at the Bulldogs, Gleese. I think he needs to get out of there.
His last minute on the weekend probably doesn't help.
Probably watching that, they may be more inclined to let him go too.
He's been Luke Beveridge's punching bag, hasn't he?
I wouldn't say punching bag.
Well, for a premiership player, he's been out of sight.
He's been out of favour. He's been out of favour.
He's not a premiership player.
No, sorry, you're right. My mistake. Yeah.
He had that gruesome broken leg and he got back. And he's a good player. I'm sure he will find another home, whether that's Essendon or someone else.
Well, that's all we have time for this week. Thanks for joining us. A big thank you to Jake and Caro. Thanks to both of you for this week. Also, thanks to Channel 7 and Fox Footy for the audio used in this episode. And as always, thanks for listening. We'll catch you next Monday.